This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McBee. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken Tuesday said Gaza's ceasefire deal needs to get done in coming days, adding the United States, Egypt, and Qatar will do everything possible to get Hamas on board.
We need to get the ceasefire and hostage agreement over the finish line, and we need to do it now.
Blinken, speaking to reporters in Doha, said once Hamas agrees to the proposal presented by Washington to tackle disagreements blocking a ceasefire deal, they would also have to get agreement on the implementation details. He said the U.S. has long said it does not accept a long-term occupation of Gaza by Israel. Israeli airstrike hit an empty hotel on Tuesday in Gaza City, according to civil defense authorities. Thick smoke could be seen rising afterwards. Israel's military has leveled swaths of the Palestinian enclave since the start of the offensive in Gaza in October of 2023. Russian sources say that Ukrainian forces have either destroyed or damaged all three of the buildings over the same river in western Russia as Kyiv's incursion enters its third week. Kyiv's incursion into Russia's Kursk is now changing the trajectory of the war and boosting morale among Ukraine's war-weary population, though the ultimate outcome of their daring incursion remains impossible to predict. Also Tuesday, a massive fire burned for the third consecutive day elsewhere in western Russia, after an oil depot was hit by Ukrainian drones. Russian President Vladimir Putin accused the Ukrainians of trying to destabilize the country, and he vowed revenge. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. The top UN official in Libya is warning that the political, military, and security situation in the oil-rich North African country has deteriorated quite rapidly, and without renewed political talks leading to a unified government and elections, there will be greater instability. Stephanie Gurry painted a grim picture to the Security Council on Tuesday of rival government forces unilaterally moving toward each other in July and August, sparking mobilizations and threats to respond and unilateral attempts to unseat the central bank governor and the prime minister in the country's west. India's Supreme Court created a hospital safety task force Tuesday to recommend steps to keep medical workers in the country safe days after a trainee doctor was raped and murdered on the job. Details from Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn.
The August 9th attack in Calcutta has caused national outrage and triggered demands for justice for the victim and greater safety for female healthcare workers. Doctors in several places have been refusing to see non-emergency patients. The court suggested the doctor-led task force consider sweeping reforms and new safety measures, such as separate resting rooms for female staff and the creation of employee panels to conduct quarterly safety audits. But hundreds of junior doctors who have been staying away from work in protest say they are not satisfied and will keep on demonstrating.
That's Reuters correspondent Christy Kilbourne reporting. Kenya and Uganda have ramped up their border screening process over the World Health Organization last week declaring the mpox surge in Africa a global public health emergency after the discovery of a new, more deadly, and more transmissible strain of the virus. Details from VOA's Jeff Custer.
Paul Kibi, port health officer at Kenya's Malaba Crossing on the border with Uganda, told the French news agency AFP when the WHO made its declaration last week, he and his staff heightened their awareness and adapted their processes. He said all travelers coming into Kenya from Rwanda, Burundi, southern Sudan, and Uganda must wash their hands thoroughly and then pass through their screening desk.
That is when we have a thermal scanner where it is able to pick the temperature of that traveler. So if the temperature of that traveler is high, if he has come from those countries which have reported this the disease, then we do more information and we isolate that patient.
Custer, VOA News.
Dozens of former guerrilla fighters and their families have been forced to abandon their village in southern Colombia after receiving death threats from a rebel group that is still fighting the government. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Delegates at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago officially nominate Vice President Harris.
Delegates at the Democratic National Convention, well, they just completed their roll call, and they have nominated Coach Walls and me to be the next Vice President and President of the United States of America.
Meanwhile, former President Barack Obama addresses the convention Tuesday night. President Biden made the case Monday night to elect Vice President Harris. Some African officials are attending the convention in Chicago. We'll have an analysis of Tuesday's convention speeches. A plane crash in Malawi Tuesday afternoon brings down a C-210 type aircraft. Kenya's top court suspends a lower court ruling regarding a controversial 2023 finance law.
There were three passengers on board. The reporters who saw the accident immediately after it had happened are reporting is that it ditched into the waters of Lake Malawi.
And Botswana begins M-Parks screening at entering ports. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. We take you now to Chicago, the Democratic National Convention, where former President Barack Obama is addressing the delegates.
It was his empathy and his decency and his hard-earned resilience, his unshakable belief that everyone in this country deserves a fair shot. And over the last 4 years, those are the values America has needed most. At a time when millions of our fellow citizens were sick and dying, we needed a leader with the character to put politics aside and do what was right. At a time when our economy was reeling, we needed a leader with the determination to drive what would become the world's strongest recovery. 15 million jobs, higher wages, lower health care costs. At a time when the other party had turned into a cult of personality, we needed a leader who was steady and brought people together and was selfless enough to do the rarest thing there is in politics, putting his own ambition aside for the sake of the country. History will remember Joe Biden as an outstanding president who defended democracy at a moment of great danger. And I am proud to call him my president, but I am even prouder to call him my friend. The torch has been passed. Now it is up to all of us to fight for the America we believe in. And make no mistake, it will be a fight. For all the incredible energy we've been able to generate over the last few weeks, for all the rallies and the memes.
That's former President Barack Obama addressing delegates at the Democratic Party National Convention in Chicago. Delegates at the convention on Tuesday night nominated Vice President Kamala Harris, who was holding a campaign rally in neighboring Wisconsin on Tuesday night.
Good evening, Milwaukee! And hello to everyone joining us from exciting Chicago. Well, they just completed their roll call. And they have nominated Coach Walls and me to be the next Vice President and President of the United States of America.
for believing in what we can do together. We are so honored to be your nominees. This is a people-powered campaign, and together we will chart a new way forward. A future for freedom, opportunity of optimism and faith. So to everyone in Chicago and across America, thank you. Thank you.
Vice President Kamala Harris speaking Tuesday night from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. President Joe Biden spoke late Monday night and made a passionate case why Americans should elect Vice President Kamala Harris as their next president in November.
Kamala and Tim will protect your freedom. They'll protect your vote to right, your right to vote. They'll protect your civil rights. And you know Trump will do everything to ban abortion nationwide. Oh, he will. You know, Kamala and Tim will do everything they possibly can. That's why you have to elect a Senate and House to restore Roe v. Wade. The ancient Greeks taught us that character is destiny. Character is destiny. For me and Jill, we know Kamala and Doug are people of character. It's been our honor to serve alongside them. And we know that Tim and Gwen Waltz are also people of great character. Selecting Kamala was the very first decision I made when I became our nominee. And it was the best decision I made my whole career. We've not only gotten to know each other, we've become close friends. She's tough. She's experienced. Her story represents the best American story. And like many of our best presidents, she was also vice president. She'll be a president our children can look up to. She'll be a president respected by world leaders because she already is. She'll be a president we can all be proud of. And she will be a historic president who puts her stamp on America's future.
President Joe Biden speaking Monday night at the Democratic Party Convention in Chicago. The National Democratic Institute is a non-profit, non-partisan organization that works to support democracy worldwide. African officials are in Chicago, Illinois, this week to observe the Democratic National Convention, learning how democracy plays out in America, even when it is a bit messy. VOA's Carol Van Den has more from Chicago.
Christopher Munya, Senior Associate for Africa and Special Advisor to the President of the National Democratic Institute, or NDI, says the U.S. Democratic National Convention is a unique chance for African officials to see up close how major political parties choose their presidential nominees and fine-tune their platforms, with delegates weighing in on the issues all the way until a platform is officially adopted at the convention, like it was here Monday night.
I've invited close to 200 internationals who are party leaders in their respective countries from Africa, Asia, Europe, Eurasia, Latin America, to use this opportunity to see firsthand and experience the electoral process in the United States, what party conventions mean, how candidates are nominated, how they are voted upon.
Famunya says while there have been gains in the past two or three decades, African officials realize there's been a democratic decline over the past few years, and that it remains to be seen if lessons learned by African leaders attending this convention will rub off on other leaders where democracy is under threat.
Such as Sudan, which at one moment looked like they were on a transition towards a positive path, have now fallen back into civil war. Or countries such as Mali and Niger and Burkina Faso, which at one point looked like they were emerging democracies, are now being governed by military juntas. So there is definitely a decline, which is probably not only African, but we see also in other parts of the world that democracy is coming under attack.
Nigerian former Senate President Ken Nnamani, who was invited here, officials say being in Chicago to see Democrats choose their presidential nominee and work on their party platform is an invaluable experience.
Unless you have watched it, you have seen it, you may be reading about it, but it's not the same as going to see the warmth, the excitement, and the general atmosphere.
Nnamani and the other African officials got a taste of that Monday night when they watched President Joe Biden step on stage to say that he has loved his job for the past 4 years, but loves his country more. In an historic move, the 81-year-old president stepped aside last month to allow his vice president, Kamala Harris, become the Democratic Party's presidential nominee. Nnamani says Africans can learn a great deal from the American system of democracy, especially when a page of history being made is rewritten by the people.
There's a lot that we are learning from, or we copied from the United States. So when you are doing anything that you are doing, influences other countries. Almost all African countries are now democratic, almost all. There may be some vestiges of those that are planting themselves permanently, like Cameroon. We have been expecting that there should be a new blood that can invigorate people and get the country going.
Both Nnamani and Famunya say observing the U.S. Republican and Democratic conventions this year can only help African leaders in their quest to support and strengthen democracy at home. Carol Van Dam at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Illinois.
Joining us live from Washington, D.C. is Kweku Nuama, a professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C. Professor, welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Thanks for having me.
So, Professor, former President Barack Obama has been speaking to the delegates in Chicago. What stands out to you so far?
So far, Barack Obama has wonderfully made a case for Kamala Harris. He started off by nicely paying homage to Joe Biden, which I think was important. And then, of course, he continued to critique Donald Trump and to remind everybody why a second Trump term will be dangerous for America.
You mentioned he paid tribute to President Barack Obama. The president spoke on Monday night. What do you think in terms of his legacy and his support for Vice President Harris's candidacy?
So Joe Biden came to this event with a heavy, heavy, heavy burden. He's not very happy because he was pushed out by the party. But at the same time, he has to endorse the vice president because the vice president is carrying forward his legacy. And so they are linked in that sense. And the speech was dark. He made a case against Trump. He went through his own record. It was as if he was defending himself to people that claim they love him, but they really forced him out of this race. He's not happy that he's out of the race. But then he had to endorse Kamala Harris and pass the baton. I think there was a little bit of a reluctance to all of that, but he did his job. And then he left town. And so I think that he closed out that era, the dark tone of the campaign, where, you know, it was all about fear, Trump is destroying democracy, all of that stuff. And he gave his speech, he shut the door on that. And what Obama is doing now is opening the door to a bright new day of joy. And you can see it, starting with Michelle Obama's speech, talking about hope is making a comeback. Barack Obama is talking about joy. This is a new opportunity, and we have to elect Kamala Harris. The dark days are over. This is a new campaign altogether. But I think Joe Biden deserves everybody's gratitude. This is a difficult decision that he took. Barack Obama referenced that. The fact that he gave up the presidency, he essentially believes that he could have won this election. And he's still kind of angry. There's a little bit of a passive-aggressive tone that was in the speech, but he did his job, and I think everybody owes him a debt of gratitude.
Professor, thank you so much for joining us live on Daybreak Africa.
Thanks for having me.
Kweku Nuama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University here in Washington, D.C. August 21st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Kenya's top court on Tuesday suspended a lower court's ruling that the 2023 finance law was unconstitutional. According to Reuters, the court says it was important to preserve stability in the budget until the merits of the government's appeal are heard next month. Macharia Muneni is a professor of history and international relations at the United States International University in Nairobi, Kenya. He tells viewers Douglas Mpuga that the judiciary in Kenya is doing a commendable job.
The courts, that's the judiciary in general, has increasingly appeared to be the protector of the people's interest, the public interest, as opposed to the voracious executive that appears to be going out of its way. That's why people keep on running to court for solace. Yes, the issue of the finance bill were contentious, but as you point out, the question going back to the 2023 finance bill was itself something, because the court found that it had not been done properly. So to the public, it's a relief from the court, because the image that the executive has portrayed for itself is one of imposing, irrespective of how people hurt. So the court is looking very good to the public. Of course, the executive is not amused, and we have had a few MPs complaining that they should do something about the judiciary to cut its power and all those kind of things.
And now that the court has cleared the government to go ahead with the finance bill, what does it mean to the people? Is it the same policies that led to the protests?
The protests have kind of calmed down because the protest people have been managed properly. Well, they won't say quite properly, but they have been managed into slowing down. So, yeah, you never know what the reaction is likely to be. She did now, because the executive said it is going to impose it again or bring it back one way or the other. So it remains to be seen how the public mood is going to be.
How would you rate the Kenyan judiciary compared to the other East African member states?
Well, the Kenyan judiciary has increasingly become active. It tries very hard to be seen to be what it claims to be, an independent judiciary. It does not mean that all the people who go to court get their wish, but the general trend is to be seen to care about the public interest. So it ranks fairly well at present. It has not really been the case. In fact, part of the reason there is a new constitution, 2010, were complaints about the judiciary before then. Since then, there have been a few complaints here and there, but what we notice with the judiciary is the effort to build up its reputation as reliable, even if you don't agree with them, at least they can be said to be honest, or they're trying to be honest.
Macharia Munene is a professor of history and international relations at the United States International University in Nairobi, Kenya. He spoke from Nairobi with viewers Douglas Mpuga. There was a plane accident in Malawi on Tuesday afternoon involving a C-210 type aircraft with three foreign passengers on board. Information Minister Moses Konkuyu says the plane went down in Lake Malawi and that a female passenger survived the accident with minor injuries. Malawian Vice President Saulos Chilima died in a plane crash along with eight other Malawians in June. Konkuyu tells me that rescue efforts are underway.
I can confirm that we had an aircraft accident that happened in the afternoon of Tuesday, 20th August, in the northern district of Nkota Kota. The accident involved a C-210 type aircraft, which was making its way from Nkota Kota to another district in the eastern part of Malawi. Preliminary reports that are coming are that there were three passengers on board, the pilot including two passengers, and what the reporters who saw the accident immediately after it had happened are reporting is that it ditched into the waters of Lake Malawi. And a rescue mission, this is a local rescue mission, made its way through using boats and canoes and managed to rescue a female passenger. And as we are speaking, the police, aviation authorities, marine authorities, and local people are on the scene because the aircraft has now been located where it is, and a rescue mission is underway.
Minister, just this year alone, there was another accident involving your vice president. What is the weather condition at this time in Malawi? And what do you think might be responsible for these accidents?
I would not really comment on what might have caused the accident. The good thing is that we have the lady that has been rescued. She walked into the ambulance, went to the hospital, got treated as an outpatient. So when she comes down, when she is psychologically stable, she should be able to give a full account of what happened. It's different from a case where we have to rely on technology, we have to rely on recordings, we have to rely on investigations to determine what might have caused the accident. In this case, we thank God we have a survivor. We have someone that has been rescued who would be able to give us a narration of what might have happened.
Moses Kunkuyu is Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Neighboring South Africa has recorded 3 deaths as a result of the dangerous type of mpox, and Botswana is anxious to keep out the rapidly spreading disease. From Habaruni, Kundisi Dube reports.
Addressing the media Tuesday, Botswana's Minister of Health, Dr. Edwin Dikoloti, said travelers using the country's major entry points will all be subjected to mpox screening.
I want to take the opportunity to assure Botswana that through the BPHR, we have significantly enhanced our influenza surveillance system. We are currently intensifying monitoring and screening at key entry points, such as borders and airports, focusing on high-risk areas.
South Africa shares a 1,900-kilometer border with Botswana and, as of August 5, recorded 3 mpox deaths. In Africa, the disease has claimed the lives of more than 500 people since the beginning of the year. Botswana Public Health Institute Acting Director Dr. Tebeyami Matseka says travelers will be required to fill out self-assessment forms at border checkpoints.
Screening at the points of entry entails self-assessment tool that we give to all travelers. You fill it out and then you submit it. But in the event you obviously have something more, and we can always attend to it. And then there are some times where through just random checks, you might identify someone who appears not to be well. So sometimes they will take those travelers on the side and investigate further.
Meanwhile, Dikoloti says Botswana is engaging with international partners for the supply of vaccines. According to Africa's Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the continent has about 200,000 vaccine doses against the requirement of at least 10 million doses. The World Health Organization country representative, Dr. Juliet Batarengai, says the scale of the mpox vaccination will not be as broad because the disease affects countries differently.
We need to have a good understanding of the epidemiology in each and every country because it is different, and to understand the transmission patterns, and this will then guide on the use of vaccines.
2 vaccines are in use against mpox, and the WHO recommends vaccination only for people at risk. Kondisi Dube, VOA News, Havoroni, Botswana.
And that's it for this Wednesday, August 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba ba ba.